Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast, where we are tired, so very, very tired, after spending an entire week covering E3 2017. Everybody's been running around since last Friday, which is just a terrifying thing to say. So much has happened since then. We've had all of the announcements and all of the megatons, mostly from Nintendo and Ubisoft for the most part. Mm-hmm. I've come away with a rather different opinion of what the RPG landscape is going to be looking about, like, this fall and kind of beyond. There's a fair amount to talk about, Nadia. So let's get right to it. It seems like people were feeling a little let down by the press conferences in general, particularly by Sony and Microsoft, or particularly by Sony, and particularly by, like, Bethesda and EA. EA is not surprising.
Yeah, we think we got what we could out of EA. Honestly, for Nintendo, it's like, you got two Metroid games, how can you be disappointed?
Oh no, I don't think people were disappointed, right? Like, they did. Uh-huh. There was, like, this gif of, like, showing a Mario Party, and, like, Nintendo is just kind of standing there, and, like...
Yeah, I've seen that.
The other three...
Luigi Does Nothing meme?
Like, the other big three, like, just kind of roll right off the edge.
Yeah, and Luigi is... Nintendo is just standing there watching them go to their doom. That was more or less it. And I have to say, even though I am a Nintendo fangirl, by all means, I wanted to, like, just fall on my knees and thank God that Nintendo's presentation was half an hour by the end of it all. Just sitting there, like, the PC show was, like, 2 hours, and...
PC show was only half an hour.
who was it? The PC show wasn't half an hour. Are you not out of your mind? It was an hour and a half at least.
Was it? Man.
It was a long time.
Maybe I'm wrong.
Because I was thinking, oh, okay, it's going to be 45 minutes. And then I can't remember who was hosting it. A really sweet, super dapper guy. He's like, oh, and we're not even halfway done. I'm like, what?
Now let's talk about, like, Intel hardware crap that nobody cares about necessarily.
And the guy up there just like, this is Intel, it's so exciting.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to wet my pants with excitement.
Well, PC people were really excited, right? I mean, I guess. Yeah,
good for them. All of the teraflops.
All right, so I think, before we go on to, like, all of the other stuff, one thing that does jump out at me, so I guess we should start with BioWare's new project, Anthem.
Right.
So, we don't know much about it. Basically, we were shown a trailer, it was a trailer.
Yeah, it was like a trailer with some gameplay in there.
Yes.
It kind of gave you an idea of what you'd be getting into, e.g. Destiny.
Yes, it is it's beautiful. Like, it is clearly a technical showcase, particularly for a console like the Xbox One X. I'm not going to get used to saying that. Xbox One X. Yeah.
It's like Mega Man, except he's in the future and his name is X.
Oh, well, if it were X, like, and it were becoming sentient, the first sentient console, like, that would be one thing, but...
That would be frightening.
As it is, it's mostly a collection of teraflops and, like, miserable rags and piles. But I was trying to be a Symphony of the Night reference, but it was kind of failing, but...
It was a good try.
So yeah, Anthem is clearly a tech demo or a technical showcase. They didn't show a lot, but what they did show looked extremely promising to my eye. You are, like, people who are called freelancers. You're going out into some kind of, I don't know, planet or jungle or something like that.
Like a hostile world in general.
And your sweet exoskeleton thing that you can upgrade.
That was pretty cool.
Your sweet mech exoskeleton that you can upgrade. Presumably there will be loots, all of the loots. It will be a slightly reheated RPG like substance. It follows in the footsteps of Destiny, but yes. I gotta say, like, I was immediately more intrigued by what Anthem had to offer than by Destiny, because, like, Destiny's fine and all, don't get me wrong, a lot of people praise the gunplay from heaven to back, but I don't know, like, give me the robots and I will always be happy, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of interested because you have the robots for one, which I'm kind of lukewarm on robots, but I did like the look of the world itself. Like, it was very lush and, like, just teeming with all this weird life. That's the kind of thing I really like.
Yeah, that's what I think it is. I mean, like, Destiny is also very colorful and has a really distinct kind of palette and look to it. But just by and large, I think I prefer the look and the feel of Anthem for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it has a very misty sort of look to it too, which I think is really kind of gives it a good ambience.
Actually, it makes me think a little bit of Avatar.
Oh God.
Yeah, which is not a compliment actually, which I feel a little bad about saying, but they have kind of a similar thing going on, right? Where your have you ever seen Avatar?
I know my father rented it once, and like I was going to watch it with him, and I didn't. So him and my mom watched together, and I said, "How was it?" He said, "Oh my God, that was a piece of shit."
So at the end, spoiler alert, there's this guy named General Ripper. I think his name is literally General Ripper, like, or maybe not. Maybe that was from something else. Regardless. Okay, so he's a general. He's like your typical, like, I love the smell of napalm in the morning kind of guy. He drives a mech. And at one point he's fighting the main character who is in, like, this Navi body. And because the Navi are very tall. And, like, the human needs the mech. And then, you know, the mech has, like a Bowie knife. And it's actually, like, but, you know, it's really, really big Bowie knife. And it's actually a really cool fight. Like, that was actually easily my favorite part of that movie. So, in effect, that I'm strongly reminded of that when I look at Anthem. So, that's what it ends up being. Cool.
Well, it's passable. I mean, that's a word for Avatar, I guess. Passable. It's very... I can't even say marketable because its appeal just died so fast.
Yes, the most profitable movie that nobody remembers.
Pretty much, yeah. It's a really interesting phenomenon, but it's a very plastic but appealing, fun to look at. It's nice to look at for a while, but I think Anthem hopefully will have a little more depth than that. From what I've seen, it's just really nice to look at, so hopefully it'll be fun to explore too.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on seeing it necessarily anytime soon. Obviously, it's not coming out this year. I will say that when I was talking to the Madden director today, he was like, Anthem, it's real good. Like, keep your eye on that one. Like, and obviously it's like, EA guy is talking up other EA game. But at the same time, you know, I found that a lot of the times, like, just because they work for a company doesn't mean they're necessarily on board with everything. And if they are not on board with it, they're just not going to talk about it. So
exactly. I was going to say he could have said nothing, in which case he would have had nothing to say.
So the fact that he just comes right out unbidden and says, Anthem, holy crap, keep your eye on that one. That gives me a lot of hope that it is going to live up to the promise. Okay.
But I'm not getting an Xbox One X for it. Don't get me wrong here.
Oh, you don't have to. It's going to be on everything else.
Yeah, I know, but...
That was the funny thing about them making it, like, their big end-of-show, like, and here's the finale. I mean, they showcased a game that's going to be for everything else.
That goes to show the state of the Microsoft exclusives, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We were talking earlier today about how Forza is actually the best Microsoft game right now. Like, and I don't think it's particularly close. I mean, you also have Halo, and you have Gears, and you have Rare, I guess, and some other stuff. But, yeah, it's Gears and Halo have very much fallen off. And
for now, yeah.
For now, and they haven't really developed anything new. And so, as a result, like, Forza, which has managed to maintain its kind of standing with gamers year after year, like, has become the de facto flagship franchise of Microsoft, but...
And that's not so bad. It's a great series.
No, absolutely. Like, I like Forza Horizon. But this is not the Forza Horizon podcast. It is the RPG podcast. And actually, like, having been to this show and seen many of the announcements, I feel a lot better about the fall lineup, okay? So just let me like read off some of the RPGs that we can look forward to this fall, Nadia. We can look forward to Pokemon Sun and Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon, which, yes, a lot of people have played Pokemon Sun and Moon, but whatevs, like, I'm looking forward to it because it's probably going to have, like, a bunch of extra stuff at the end, and it's going to be kind of the one that I play the most, I think. We can look forward to Ni No Kuni 2. We can look forward to Divinity Original Sin 2. We can look forward to a little game called South Park.
That one looks pretty fun, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it looks pretty all right. I mean, I'm not I'm not all on board with the South Park humor or whatever, but all things considered, like, I really love how faithful it is to look and the feel of the show, at the very least. And
it's pretty much one-to-one.
And let's be honest, like, there are times when South Park can be pretty freaking funny, so...
Pretty much.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know... I might end up playing it. We'll see. It looks cute, but
put it that way.
The game that I cannot wait for, and I feel like there should be a little mea culpa here. Like that was my mistake. Was like I was like Xenoblade 2. That's not coming out this year. Wah wah.
Told you.
That's not coming out till like 2019.
Yeah, I think someone in the comments said, I have it on good authority, this isn't coming out till 2019, winky face.
Well, that's not the case. Nintendo confirmed that it will be coming out for the Nintendo Switch in 2017, this fall, which gives them, honestly, a really intriguing 1-2 punch this fall. Like, I would say Super Mario Odyssey and Xenoblade Chronicles 2, very good 1-2 punch.
Yes.
Unfortunately, alas, not on the show floor.
Oh, it wasn't, huh?
Not playable. Either because it wasn't either because it wasn't really like just a good game to demo, or like I don't know. Like I wouldn't demo an RPG on the show floor personally. I would show a little.
Yeah,
trailer.
To be honest, I have played RPGs on like show floors, and you never get anywhere. You don't get a good impression of what the game is like. So I understand why they didn't have it there.
Yeah. So it however did get a trailer during the Nintendo Direct.
Yes,
like it's hard to say like much in the way that is meaningful about the characters. You have a boy, you have a girl, there's a sword, there's some mention of something called the Aegis, which makes me wonder if there's going to be mechs in this one. Because they said that
it sure
you're the
looked like it had like a combination of like the biological and mechanical. Like I saw like kind of a mechanical. There was a scene where they were flying by like the World Tree, and you could see like this huge mechanical. I guess it was a take on the World Serpent, and that was pretty cool. I think the Aegis is like some sort of mech thing that they were flying in, or a ship or something.
So I think that. So based just you know I mean obviously it's a trailer like it's hard to say. Like, maybe the characters will end up being not that appealing compared to Xenoblade Chronicles' original characters, but I am really looking forward to Xenoblade Chronicles 2. It's easily one of my most anticipated games of the holiday season. I'm really grateful to have this thing. But more importantly, so Xenoblade Chronicles came out on the Nintendo 3DS. I really don't think that Xenoblade Chronicles... being on the 3DS really did that game any favors.
No, the 3DS screen was a little too small. I think the Switch will be a nice sweet spot for a portable play.
It wasn't just that it was too small. It was the fact that it was a clear visual downgrade, which, I mean, maybe that's inevitable, right? Like, okay, we can permit that. And it also just wasn't a super great port in general.
It did have problems.
It didn't do a great job with the touchscreen or anything like that. Like, it just it was not the ideal way to play that game. And you could say, well, whatever, I will take that. I will play Xenoblade Chronicles any way I can get it. Like, if that means like having to put aside the kind of you know, the Wii version ain't the greatest way to play it either. Probably the ideal way is to rip the it from a disc and play it on an emulator and play it in HD. For being perfectly honest here, but
that'd be nice.
Yeah, no, it actually is really nice. It's gorgeous. But yeah, the 3DS version, it was okay.
But this version of the game is built for the Switch specifically, so
yes.
I think it's going to be really nice.
Yes.
The first game, even though God, something was wrong with the faces, but everything else was gorgeous.
Oh gosh, what was wrong with the faces?
They were just really blurry. It was like looking at some kind of like I can't describe it, like some sort of pagan monstrosity. If they turned to look at you, if they weren't looking at you, everything was okay. If they were looking at you, it was like, oh god.
So the original Xenoblade Chronicles had an interesting kind of path to the U.S. Obviously, as you'll recall, Xenoblade Chronicles came out in Japan and quickly word spread among the import community and JRPG fans in general that it was very good, and it became part of the original Operation Rainfall circa 2011. People were signing petitions, and like there was a whole board. People wanted Last Story, the
Pandora's Tower or something like
Pandora's
that?
Pandora's Tower, thank you, and Xenoblade Chronicles to come over to the U.S. This being 2011, the Wii was very much on its last legs. Nintendo announced the Wii U at E3 2011, so it was almost over. The Wii U was coming out the following year. Nintendo is seemingly not that interested in going through the trouble and the expense to localize these games, so people were really disappointed. But then Xenoblade Chronicles gets picked up for England. It gets localized for England, so it's now, to add insult to injury, it's out in English over there. But it's not coming out over here, which was...
Yeah, people were really mad about that, and they had every reason to be.
And the real kicker was that the Wii was not... the Wii was not region-free. So it wasn't like you could just import it. You had to mod your Wii. You had to jailbreak it, essentially, with that Twilight Princess glitch. And was the only way that you could realistically play it, short of buying a Wii from the UK. Mm-hmm. Which I thought about doing, by the way. Just
did
so that
really?
I could play that game.
Well, thankfully you didn't have to.
Yes, I really wanted to play it. It looked great.
It's a great game. I really enjoyed it. It's one of my favorites.
It's very strong. I will say that. I think it is not, you know, the greatest RPG I've ever played. I think it's good. I think it's very good.
But it has so many parts that work, and like even though you don't really have so many parts that are fantastic other than the music, which is just incredible, everything just comes together and makes a really nice, warm experience. And I really like the characters, and I'm kind of glad they went back to the British accents and the stupid, doofy main character who's kind of a dork but kind of sweet at the same time.
I hate assigning arbitrary like scores to games, but for me, it's right in between a 4 and a 4.5 on the U.S. gamer scale.
That's a good place for it.
So 4.2, right?
It is definitely a 4.2. That is a good number.
This is like a very arbitrary number. Like, why the 0.2? Well, I was kind of in between 4.25. I don't know.
Too much water.
Yes, exactly. Oh my god! Thank you, Nadia. That is a thing. But so the original Xenoblade Chronicles, it had these sweeping vistas. It was really gorgeous. It ultimately ended up coming out here, and because it was localized in England, and they kept that localization.
Yes.
All the characters have British accents.
Yes.
They're like, feel the power of the Monado.
Oh, it's fantastic. Hey-hoo. I just adore it. I switched back to the English voice. I switched to the Japanese voices at some point. I said, you know what? This is not right. And I switched back to the English ones.
I like the British voices.
Oh, I love them. I adore them.
It had a good soundtrack, too.
Oh, fantastic. The theme for Gwar Plains, I still listen to that every so often. It's just fantastic.
Yes, when you're exploring, it's really good.
It's perfect exploration music. Mm. And same composer on Xenoblade Chronicles 2, so hooray.
Also, the battle system, by and large, very good. So the way it worked was effectively you could control, like, you could take control of, like, any character you wanted, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
And you would be choosing between, like, different options. Like, there was different skills. They all had different skills, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would charge up over time. And what you wanted to do was kind of sync them up in their own way so that they could, like, synergize and do different things. And, you know, you had your typical healers and that kind of thing, and, like, buffs mm-hmm. and debuffs. But one of the secret sauce, you know, every battle system needs to have a secret sauce.
Of course.
Was the fact that the Monado, which is the which is the sword, it's the sword that the main character gets right mm-hmm. at the beginning,
the
that
blade.
Is, like, sucking his life out, it's killing him, if I recall correctly. It's good for killing the mechs, and the mechs are
yes.
the bad guys in this game. Like,
yeah, the Mechanus.
Yes, they're the villains, and, like, it cuts through them like a hot knife through butter, but it is not useful against organics.
Nope, but, like, you can cast something on there to make it useful against organics.
Yes, but it is
cast
a temporary effect. Yes.
Yeah.
It is a temporary
that's
effect.
That's what other friends are for.
And not super great against bosses. So party composition, when you are taking on a boss, becomes extremely important.
Yes.
Like, you have to give a lot of thought about the strategy and the composition to how you want to approach a thing. And I really liked that. That was really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a game that rewards you for testing out different party combinations. The way that I remember it, though, is Shulk is the one who can wield the Monado without any negative effects, whereas Dunban is the one who wielded it at first, and he was the one who was having his life sucked away. But I
right.
did like how badass they made him by making it so that he could wield it at all, because Ryan tried to pick it up, and he got, like, blown across the room, as I recall.
Mm.
And later on, when you meet up with Dunban again, he has his own sword, and he made it out of, like, a Mechanus, so he can also slice through mechs. And that's why I use Dunban, like, all the frickin' time.
Yeah, Dunban was pretty
cute.
Cool. Yeah, just
he was
so
awesome.
Yeah, you know, so I like the tactics to it. It's a very mm-hmm. straightforward game. Like,
yes.
It has a certain amount of momentum, and, like, there is backtracking that happens, but by and large, the side quests are kind of simple. It's
yeah,
mindful.
Yeah, I really like the fact that you finish the side quest. You're not tracking back to that idiot who gave you the quest. You just complete it, and you get your reward right there. I am
yes.
so down with that, and nobody does that.
Yeah, that was nice, but for the most part, it was kind of, you know, fetch questy.
Yeah, but as long as I don't have to go, like, schlepping back to the dumbass who gave it to me, I'm okay with that. Hey, give me my money. Yeah, I'm done. Good. Everyone's happy. Here's your stupid flower. Get out of my face.
You know, it's the it's the simple act of hunting that crap down that drives me crazy. I just hate
the shinies.
That. Yeah, I find that so boring, and I have no idea. Like, I guess there are people who are, like, really OCD about that kind of stuff and just find simple pleasure in, like, collecting things. Like, did you know that, like, back in, God, it must have been, like, 2012, 2013, that there was somebody who managed to get all the way to the level cap in World of Warcraft without doing, like, any, like, without attacking anybody? And you know how they did
that?
They just collected
how?
Crap.
Oh, Jesus.
They just got the tiny little XP boost from collecting things, and that's all they did.
I wonder if that's what South Park was parodying that one time with their Warcraft episode, because you had the boys kept getting killed by some dumbass who was, like,
yep.
super high level. So they just leveled up, killing boars for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks so he wouldn't notice them. And then they just demolished him. So I wonder if that was a reference to that.
All time greatest South Park episode.
My father, who's not into video games at all, like, he still talks about the scene where Butters shows up with Cartman's exact character. And he's like, oh, I could be playing Hello Kitty Adventure.
No. One of the great RPG moments, the bits where they, like, were, like, grinding up their characters to the, you know, to the montage and everything like that. Like, that is the perfect MMO, like, kind of image.
Mm-hmm.
And then concluding with, like, when they finally take out the troll who's, like, ganking all of them and is, like, somehow,
yeah.
like, broken the game. And then cutting to him, like, wearing the tendonitis,
wrist,
like, glove and
yeah.
everything. And he's just kind of, like, sitting there, like, staring at the screen, like, What? Completely, like, wordlessly. Like, the cutting to him, like, the cuts to him where he's just wordlessly playing, just like going...
Yep.
Amazing. Amazing.
That was pretty perfect.
I totally digress, and I have no idea how we got onto that. But oh, yes, the grinding.
Yeah.
Yes. They doubled down on that in Xenoblade Chronicles X.
Mm-hmm. They did.
Which, let's be honest, very interesting game.
That was huge.
Maybe even kind of a kind of like pointed the way toward Breath of the Wild in some respects.
I think so. I really do think so. And although I really appreciate Chronicles X for what it was, I did not like it as much as the original, because I will put it this way. I'm really glad that Chronicles 2 is going back to the kind of fantasy world where everyone lives on top of Titans versus like, hey, here's an alien planet.
Space.
Space. Woo.
With rando girls and fairly generic characters.
And those freaking, what are those called? Those little stupid mascot characters with the big ears?
I don't remember, but I do think that it gives me even more respect for what Nintendo managed to accomplish with Breath of the Wild. Because Xenoblade Chronicles X, compared to Breath of the Wild, felt so empty and just like, they were like, go to that mountain and see what you can do. And I'm like, okay, cool. I went to this random piece of terrain. Nice.
Yeah,
right?
It's a hill, all right.
There sure are, like, some things around here. I mean, I guess, what am I doing? Like, what's the point of all this? okay, cool. It's like, well, the bulk of the game is fetch quests. And I'm like,
yes.
No. The answer is no to that thing. And then, I don't know, it was not, like, they actually did some things with the battle system, and, like, it was very similar to the previous one, but they improved it, you know, and everything.
Yeah.
So that was cool, like, especially the customization was more in-depth than it was in Xenoblade Chronicles. I recall that the customization in Xenoblade Chronicles, aside from picking your skills, if I recall correctly... Mm-hmm. Was not super in-depth. That was mostly reserved for the party compositions and that kind of thing, so...
I did like how, even though you were level frickin' one, you would see these huge-ass dinosaurs, like, just roaming around in the plane, so I'd be like, oh man, I'm gonna, like, just totally screw around with these dinosaurs. So I run up to one, I get kicked in the face, and just my hit points drop to zero and... So don't fuck around with the dinosaurs in Xenoblade Chronicles X if you are not level 60 million.
The moral of today's Acts of the Blood God, don't fuck around with dinosaurs.
It's good advice.
It is good advice. Don't mess around with dinosaurs. I mean, don't be a Mario. Don't possess them with your hat. Don't become a T-Rex. That was really cute, wasn't it?
I can't wait to become a T-Rex.
Alright, so Xenoblade Chronicles 2, we'll see how it ended up turning out. It, from the look of it, looks like it is very much in the style of the previous Xenoblade Chronicles. It is a numbered sequel, as opposed to X, and it looks good. I got a few glimpses of the sweeping vistas.
Nice.
That, you know, like, that we know and love from the previous Xenoblade Chronicles, and oh my gosh, this game's going to be in HD. Is it going to look like Anthem? No, but I don't think I care, because freaking good.
I think that's what this E3 taught me more than anything else, is I don't care how high resolution an image is. I mean, if it's very high res, that's nice, that's great, but if it doesn't look fun to visit and play, then I'm just not that invested.
So when you take all of that, not only do you have, like, you have some really strong RPGs this fall. You have Xenoblade, like, I think Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and Divinity Original Sin 2, that is a heck of a 1-2 punch. I,
and,
like,
don't
totally
forget,
retract what I said.
Info.
Zelda's getting more story.
You
if you're into Horizon Zero Dawn, you're getting that expansion
DLC.
Pack. Like, what looks like a pretty meaty DLC expansion pack. And then, on top of that, you are getting Etrian Odyssey 5. Which I briefly played while I was at E3, actually.
Oh, hey. How'd it look?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, it's So I can't say much about it, except that it is kind of a return to its roots. So Etrian Odyssey 3 and 4 kind of took the series in slightly different directions. Like Etrian Odyssey 3 had you sailing,
Nice.
for example. Yeah, so in that respect, it was varying up the formula. This one is clearly a return to the series's kind of roots. Like you're trying to, I guess, get to the top of the world tree.
Yeah. The usual, like you do.
Like you do, like you're trying to get to
Let's
the top
climb
of the
this
world
world
tree,
tree.
like climb the world tree.
Just
So,
like you climb tar if you climb trees in the park, you can climb the world tree.
yes. So, I mean, and in most respects, it's going to be the same as your typical Etrian Odyssey game, which the fun of that game is getting a party together that you really like, finding the right party composition. It has like cool art for all of the characters, but otherwise, like you are creating them kind of from scratch, getting them like properly equipped and everything, and just trying to survive,
Right.
like because that is a really hard game, and it is
Yeah, I know. Parrish has said as much many times.
very grindy. Once you get to the second stratum, it usually starts kicking you in the teeth. So I fully expect Etrian Odyssey 5 to be similar. Though it does have one addition that I kind of like.
What's that?
It has an auto mapper.
Oh, isn't that
So,
controversial?
yeah, well, to be honest, I'm kind of a lazy mapper myself.
I'm a terrible mapper. I am so bad with a sense of direction.
I just don't like taking the time to be like, I'm filling in the little things and I'm
Yeah,
adding
me
in
neither.
like,
I'm lazy
dropping in
too.
that, and I better put like the X here and the door here, and Which I get it. Like, I know that it's like a throwback, it's nostalgic, it goes back to the days when we were playing PC RPGs and like we had graph paper. Can I tell you something though, Nadia? I never used the graph paper.
What did you use? Just lined paper like a heathen?
I didn't use any paper, and I was very bad at those
I
games.
was gonna say, did you stumble around into a wall and die? Because that's all I can think of the happening.
I did not make a map. I ended up using my friend's map.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? When I played games like that on my Commodore 64, like the ones by Epix, they did one that was pretty good. It'd be fun to play for like half an hour, then I'd die, and I'd be like, okay, well, I guess I always had this vague hope that even though I was stumbling around, I'd get somewhere, and I never did, of course, but
Of course,
I had
no.
fun on the way. I
You
had fun on
wouldn't.
the way to my death.
I used to play Return to Zork. Return to Zork isn't an RPG, it's more of an adventure game, but it does have one RPG-like element, or like it's kind of mindful of RPGs from that era because at one point you end up in a couple of there are a couple of labyrinths in that game, and if you just try to stumble around, one of them, like you have to use your stick, and you have to test the ground in front of you, and if you just step blindly into it, you will sink into the mud and die.
That sounds about right for that kind of game.
And the other one, you have to drink milk.
Ooh, delicious.
Because if you don't drink milk, your vision will start to go
What the
because
fuck?
it's dark. It is so dark that you will literally start to go blind. And
You
if
can
you
get
go
eaten by a Gru.
blind, you will stumble around in the dark and get eaten by Grooze.
That's horrifying. What does milk have to do with vision, though?
It improves your vision. Duh.
But is it
Didn't
carrot
you ever
milk?
learn that in school?
No.
That's because it's not true. It doesn't actually improve your vision. Neither do carrots. Did they already say that carrots improve your vision? Like, that apparently
I
was
know
made up.
that they contain vitamin A, but it was also a code for something to do with the Second World War and something about buttons.
Yes.
I don't know. I can't remember how it went
Yes,
exactly.
yes, 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 yes. In any case, Etrian Odyssey 5 is a throwback to those things, and it doesn't really do anything for me from a nostalgia standpoint, though I appreciate that it can do a lot for a lot of other people. If it is in it
Yeah,
like
like
any
me.
other Etrian Odyssey game, it will be very hard, very grindy, but ultimately like very mechanically deep. And for people who really enjoy the Etrian Odyssey series, the journey is kind of the reward. Like it is so freaking gratifying to look at a dungeon like well into it and be like, yes. Look at that map.
I explored this dungeon.
I mapped that sucker. I killed the boss set at the end of it. I am going up to the second strata now. Oh my god, these enemies are killing me. Oh god, what do I... Ah, crap, here come two more FOEs. Ah, crap, I'm dead. Game over.
Game over, you lose.
So yeah, I played some of that. I will be playing it. I will be enjoying it, just like I did Etrix Odyssey 3 and 4.
I will definitely give it a try.
Gotta say, Nadia, it's going to be a heck of a strong fall for the Nintendo 3DS. Can you believe how...
It really is.
That thing is alive and kicking.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere this season, that's for sure.
Yeah, we were all like, the Nintendo 3DS, it sure is dead. I mean, or at least, maybe not us, but a lot of people. I mean, heck, we wrote a eulogy, for God's sake.
We were a little premature on that one.
I guess we were. Like, Nintendo, like, they were not BSing when they said that. They were like, no, we think we're going to keep this going for a little bit longer. I mean, the thing is 5 years old at this point. It's still going.
The only thing that disappoints me is that we still didn't hear about Mother 3, and I thought for sure we should... Why did I even think that? Of course we didn't hear about Mother 3.
Come on,
but we heard about Metroid, so I don't know. Anything's possible.
I would be very surprised if we hear about Mother 3 at any point. You know what I want more than Mother 3? I want a new damn Earthbound game.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Although I don't think it's coming anytime soon.
I don't think so. I think the guy who wrote it, like, is like kind of done with that.
Shigesato Itoi, yeah, he said he's done. There is a fan project for a quote-unquote Earthbound 4. The name has been changed since for obvious reasons. And that looks really fun, actually. That looks like it's done really well. But, yeah, it's not official by any means.
No, so... I would not be holding my breath for Mother 3 at any point. One other game that I also got to play when I was at the Atlas booth was Yakuza Kiwami, which is the remake of the original Yakuza.
Right.
And I actually, like, I was talking to the localization producer for Yakuza Kiwami, and I was just like, I ever give any consideration to bring in the dub back, given that, you know...
Mark Hamill to Majima.
Right. I mean, well, yeah, at the time it was kind of ill-advised. It ended up not being a great dub. Like, the script wasn't very good. Like, Sega was handling this, not Atlas. And then...
Right.
Like, because Atlas is working on this one. And they're like, eh. but I was like, really, any consideration to getting it dubbed again? Because the general assumption is that, you know, they don't have enough money for it, and I'm sure that's also the case. But he was like, the money is not the issue. We just don't wanna. I was like,
that's fair.
Interesting. I was like, why not? He's like, we see it kind of as a foreign film.
Yeah, no, that's very true. That it keeps it very genuine.
It does keep it genuine, doesn't it? Because
it does.
And he's like, it's just the vibe, right? It's like you're watching a foreign film. And I'm like, that's fair. And
They really, like, I'm sure Atlas has a tight budget to begin with, so they really don't need to spend money on a dub that no one wants. Maybe some people want it. I don't.
I don't know. I've always felt like when it comes to our, you know, games, like, a fully voiced dub confers a certain amount of legitimacy, and I think maybe the cliche or the stereotype is that if they're not able to spend money on the dub, then it's like a pretty cheap project to begin with, which maybe is a little fair.
Yeah, to be fair, if there is any company that could pull off like a dub worthy of Yakuza, it would be Atlas, 100%.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Persona, even though like people complain about Persona 5's script, I think the way the voice actors delivered it, like, I did not have a problem with the writing.
They sold the hell out of that script, didn't they?
What's that?
They sold the hell out of that script, didn't they?
They did, and all my hats off to them. They did a really good job with it. I mean, there was a point here and there where it was like, yeah, okay, whatever. But they did a fantastic job.
Yes, they did. So I'm not like, I don't necessarily care that Yakuza Kiwami isn't going to be dubbed. And if anything, I played through Final Fantasy 15 in its entirety with the Japanese voice acting as opposed to the English.
I used English, so I really go back and forth between, it depends on my mood. But I just told you how I started in Japanese, I started in English for Xenoblade, and then I switched back to English because I just missed those goofy-ass accents.
Where, like, Persona Persona, like, the thing that I also found kind of interesting, aside from the fact that they said that they saw it as kind of a foreign film, was that they're like, oh, it's so Japanese, you know, like so steeped in Japanese culture, and, like, they're using the honorifics and everything, that it's like,
Persona, though.
It just doesn't make any sense. I'm like, well, I mean, you did it with Persona, and it was like, yeah, but it's a different vibe, because...
It kind of is.
Like, Yakuza, like, on the one hand, it can be deeply silly. Like, deeply, deeply silly. But on the other hand, it can be, you know, it can be really kind of actually pretty serious. Like,
yeah,
the Shakespearean and magnitude power struggles that are happening in the within the Yakuza crime syndicates in Tokyo.
Yeah, and that's one thing I mentioned in our top 10 trailers. Read it. One thing I really envy about the Yakuza series as a writer is how they can switch on that silliness on and off without a hitch. Like, they can sell one or the other without really making you disbelieve.
Yes.
Most of the time. Then a chicken shows up.
Absolutely, yeah, right. I was playing Yakuza 6 as well.
Mm-hmm. That looks pretty interesting.
Yeah. So Kiryu finally has a cell phone.
He caved.
Yeah, he has an app and everything that lets him, I guess, text people. That's how he can get, like, missions and stuff. And then he can also, he can access the map through that and everything. Like, it was interesting going back and forth between Kiwami and Kiryu, because, oh my gosh, there's so many times that I've started in that same alley. Like, I recognize that alley, like, anywhere. And, like, it's like, here we are again, right? And so, something that I really like about Yakuza 6 is how seamless it is. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't have load times for the most part. And theoretically, you could just, like, punch dudes all over the neighborhood. Like, it's not like you're in an arena. Like, so right. I started a fight near a convenience store.
Uh-huh.
And we're, like, fighting, and I'm, like, going, ah! And I punched them right into the convenience store, and there's some poor salary man going, ah! And I'm just, punching them into, like, racks and everything. Oh, it was so great.
That's hilarious. Oh my god, you gotta get some yakety sacks up on that shit.
Oh my gosh, and they were like, yeah, you could, like, totally do that all over the place. Like, you just fight them anywhere. And I'm like, that's not too bad.
That's pretty awesome, the fact that you can just, like, punch dudes into, like, the shelves full of porn or whatever, just everything scattering everywhere. Pew!
Did I ever tell you why I always felt like Yakuza really resonated in Japan more than it does over here?
Is it because of punching people in authority?
Yeah, no, I think that the social mores are such over in Japan that you're always expected to be extremely polite and extremely, like, I want to say deferential to other people, like, right?
Right.
Well, you're the opposite of that in Yakuza. Kiryu just walks through anybody he wants, and they're like, right? That is a really empowering feeling to be able to do that. And I think it's just a fun feeling. And then, of course, you're punching fools, like, in the alleys and everything. And then beyond that, it also has, like, some of the best voice actors that you're going to find in Japan. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, if anything, I think that another reason that kind of went unsaid was that the caliber of voice actor you're going to find here is just not going to be able to match the voice actors that they have already over in Japan. Even when you have guys like Mark Hamill, who is obviously the best in the business, like, they're finding, like, legit stars to play these people. So, yeah, might as well keep the original voice track, right?
You know, your comment about how he pushes people around, like, just while walking, it reminded me, I was surprised that was the thing you could do in Final Fantasy XV, too. Like, Noctis just plowed the shit out of people. He just, like, you know, elbowed them back and forth. Like, it kind of made me feel bad when I was riding Chocobos, because if I, like, you know, so much as touched one of my dudes, I go, like, sailing, like, getting out of my way.
I think the vibe there is different, though. I think it's that Noctis is thoughtless.
True.
Like, that's one of the main
the
things.
The prince, get the hell out of my way.
Well, it's more than that. It's, I think one of the main themes is that Noctis is growing from kind of a thoughtless prince who's kind of whiny, but whiny in a different way. Like, people always are like the stereotype of the millennials is that the millennial generation, which I guess I kind of fall into that, maybe.
I have no idea if I do or not.
Who knows? Let's just pretend that we do.
Okay.
is that we're whiny, right? Like, we're always complaining. And that, like, one of the things, and Noctis is very much a millennial. He's always in his phone. He's kind of, like, disengaged. He's, like, kind of whiny. He's a little bit entitled. And in that and that reflects in the way that he's walking around, and he can just kind of, like, bump past people, and it's like, whatever. And that's one of the main roles of Gladio, is just kind of punch him into shape and make him, like, a king.
And someone has to do it.
Somebody has to do it. But, yeah, I really... I like Yakuza 6 a lot, or, like, I like Yakuza a lot, and I think it really found its audience in Yakuza 0. I suspect that some of it is the fact that it was set in the 80s, some of that was the fact that it was a standalone story, so that, like, you didn't have to just get into it, and some of it was just the fact that it caught on social media, because the absurdity was so high.
Cause it was definitely a very shareable game.
Kiryu is such... He's the perfect straight man. Like, he just makes this... Yeah, like, he... Like, you'll see somebody saying something completely ridiculous, and it'll just cut to Kiryu just, like, staring at her, like, with this, like, stony expression on his face. And it's perfect.
The expression never changes. It is.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And it's... I'm sad that this is apparently the last Kiryu game, so, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, one thing I will say is the way... My husband and I actually got introduced to Yakuza before Yakuza 0 was, what's the name of the Cross Zone games?
Project Cross Zone.
Project Cross Zone, yeah, the second one has Majima in it. And I'll just never forget, the best line I ever heard of a video game was fighting with Axel Stone, or Axel Steel, whatever his name is, from Streets of Rage. And... of course, Axel was like, oh, I must, like, defeat, like, this bad guy. I'm all full of justice. And, like, Majima was like, damn, do all the cops in Canada or wherever talk like you?
Oh, my gosh. Is Axel a cop in Canada?
No. But the fact that he's, like, just like, damn, are you from, like, all the cops talk in the Canada or wherever you're from?
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Kazuma. Anyway, so yeah, Yakuza, let's see, I think Kiwami's coming out this year and 6 is coming out next year. One more thing about Kiwami really quickly before we move on is that when you're doing karaoke, if you do karaoke in Yakuza Kiwami, you will have flashbacks to Yakuza 0.
Ah, that's adorable.
So, like, he'll be singing, like, this, it's the classical Japanese music, like, kind of romantic or whatever, and scenes from... like, still shots from Yakuza 0 start popping up because he's remembering, like, the stuff that happened.
That's
I like that, actually. I like
that's
that.
Really cute.
I like the way they tie Yakuza 0 into the remake of the original.
I've never been, like, we have karaoke in Toronto, of course. We have the kind where everyone stands up in front of the stage, and the other kind with the more Asian kind where you have the different rooms. But, God, I haven't gone to karaoke in years, and I definitely haven't done Japanese karaoke. Do you have to, like, sing in Japanese, or do they have, like, English songs, too?
In Japanese karaoke? No, you can totally sing in English. In fact, when I'm in Japan, like, you can pick all of the songs, right? And you can sing, like, you can sing totally tons of songs in English, so...
Well, then again, JoJo, one of the big songs for that now, the end credit song is Savage Garden's I Want You, which just blew my mind, because that was, like, so... Savage Garden is totally my jam. I mean, my 90s jam, but it is my jam nonetheless.
Indeed.
So I was so happy to see that.
All right. A couple other notes before we kind of wrap up our discussion of E3. Core Pokemon game was announced for the Nintendo Switch. It was not Pokemon Stars. They confirmed that they are working on a new game. We don't know anything else.
No, they've said maybe a year or so. So that one's a little bit far off. They're not going to steal the thunder for Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon.
If it is the MO of Game Freak is they always come in 2 years into a generation. Like clockwork. It's actually kind of amazing. GBA 2003 after the GBA originally came out in 2001. DS came out in 2007 after launching in 2004. It was actually originally in 2006 in Japan, but it was a little bit delayed. And then continuing on to the 3DS, we had X and Y in 2013, 2 years after the 3DS originally came out. So if that holds, we will officially see Pokemon whatever the 9th generation. I think we're on Gen 9.
Yeah, crap.
Be circa 2019. 9th generation in 2019.
Wow, that's perfect.
They got a lot of assets to build.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But I was thinking back to, I was played a lot of Pokemon when I was in the hospital last winter, and I was really, really, really stoned on painkillers, because this was abdominal surgery, so they really keep you stoned.
Ooh.
And the most interesting thing, I was going through Po-Town, and I was trying to play. I'm like, am I lucid enough to play this game? And everyone kept saying the words grated cheese over and over and over.
What?
Every character I talked to said grated cheese, grated cheese. I'm like, okay, I'm going to sleep.
What year was, was this?
This was Pokemon Sun and Moon.
Whoa. I don't remember that scene. I don't think that happened, Nadia.
I don't think it happened at all. But it happened in my mind, my fevered, drugged mind. It was really interesting. I thought you should know.
So yeah, core Pokemon Kyurem coming off the Nintendo Switch. I think we were all expecting this. Though, I suppose that, as with the caveat, that it was not a given. It was not a sure thing. Like, right. There was every possibility that Game Freak could have gone, no, we're going to hold out. We're going to hold out for whatever the heck is the next Nintendo thing. Like, because Nintendo has said that they're not necessarily abandoning the 3DS. So
Yeah.
So
it sure doesn't seem like that. So I think, you know, we'll see where we are maybe this time next year. But I think the 3DS has a lot of life left in it.
Yeah, I mean is a successor to the 3DS. Like, they could have held out. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But instead, like, no, they embrace the Switch, and that is a big deal, actually, because...
It's a very big deal.
They're set in the near term with games like, of course, the nice 1-2 punch of Mario Odyssey and Xenoblade Chronicles. Hopefully the fact that it's selling well enough will be enough to entice still more development. We have a Kirby and a Yoshi game coming out next year, and presumably more. And then, in the longer term, we can look forward to a new Metroid Prime, which is very exciting.
Metroid, very exciting.
Yeah, and we can totally look forward to a new Pokemon. And when that Pokemon comes out, like...
That's the end.
Pokemon is a killer app.
It is, 100%.
No two ways about it. And Pokemon on the Nintendo Switch, like, with a proper console Pokemon... that you can play on your TV. That's really enticing. I could totally see myself building up a good team and, like, legitimately, like, settling in and playing, like, a whole bunch of, like, competitive battles or whatever on my TV and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, I am looking forward to it. I am very excited to see what they have in store. I'm guessing we'll have a whole direct for that sometime in the future, long future ahead. Yep. But...
A long future, like, say, spring 2019.
Still before Final Fantasy VII Remake.
I would not expect a new Pokemon next year.
No.
The other note is, see, Beyond Good and Evil 2 was revealed during E3, and according to Mike, it is going to be an RPG.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't catch that part.
Beyond Good and Evil 2 will apparently be an RPG. It's going to be very different, I guess, from the original Beyond Good and Evil. And it's going to be, like, kind of a sandboxy exploration game. I call it the Captain Bucky O'Hare RPG of my dreams, because you're flying around in a spaceship with various animal characters. I mean, there you go, right?
That is pretty cool. I do like, you know, animal characters. I think they're neat most of the time. Like I said on the in the Slack channel, okay, how many swears is this monkey going to say? But I did like the way they were modeled and stuff like that.
That was a great moment, actually. It was a very heartfelt moment, because the creator who's been working on, you know, Beyond Good and Evil going, like, back more than 15 years, like, he actually legitimately got choked up on the stage, and
it was
very touching.
There's a lot of little touching moments like that, like the guy who unveiled Rabbids, when they put the spotlight on him in the audience, he was kind of crying a little bit, too.
Yeah, because he had been working on it for so long, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that Mario and Rabbids might actually be good? Never in a million years.
I kind of had a feeling, like, of course we don't know for sure if it's good or not yet, but it sure doesn't look like it's trash. And I guess, let's face it, Nintendo wasn't going to lend Mario to total trash.
Oh, hell no. I mean, it's not a given. I mean, just because it has Nintendo's name on it doesn't mean it's automatically going to be good.
It does look fun. What I saw, I really like the mechanics going on there.
Mike's down with it. He's been trying to get me to put it on our top 10 list. We'll see if it happens. Check
adorable.
The site. Our E3 awards will be up then, so you'll see if he managed to get into my head to do it. And speaking of Ubisoft, actually, Mike says that Assassin's Creed Origins is full-blown RPG now.
Really? I guess I'm not too surprised, but that's
yeah, he says it has stats, loot, the whole nine yards. It's borderline Witcher. I'm like,
wow.
Qua?
Qua?
Yeah, I'm like, okay, got me interested. Like, that might be literally the first time that I've been excited about Assassin's Creed since maybe Black Flag. Maybe even before that.
I can't remember which one I played. I think it was Revelations. And God, I did that for GamePro back
in the day. That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
Long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
I know I did watch through the latest one, the one in London.
Syndicate.
Which one? Syndicate. I did like the characters in that one. I didn't play it. I just watched it on YouTube.
Yeah, I think that Origins has a really great palette. I really like the setting. And if it is legitimately going in a very much more RPG-ish style, Mike says it's not necessarily quite like Witcher 3, but, I mean, like, riding around on a horse in the desert.
Yeah, I like that. And you have a hawk to do hawk things.
Hawk with the hawk things. I thought it was funny during the press conference, they were like, we're here playing Assassin's Creed on a laptop or something, and we're showing off-screen footage, and the glare is way too high. We are going to, okay, cut it off. That was a funny moment.
That was.
Okay. And I think last but not least is the thing that I'm actually, Klee Entertainment, or is it Clay? I'm not sure how
Clay.
You pronounce it.
Yeah.
Klee Entertainment? Creators of Don't Starve, Shank, a whole bunch of really good games.
Mm-hmm.
They are working on an RPG. And
yes, and I'm very excited about that.
I went looking for it all over the place on the show floor, could not find it, unfortunately.
Oh, is it there? Like, is it at the show?
I tried to find it, but it wasn't at the PC booth, and it wasn't in the Indiecade, so I don't know.
Did you get a chance to play, by the way, the new one by Image and Form? SteamWorld Dig 2. Oh, that's not really an RPG, though.
That's not an RPG. Alas, SteamWorld Heist was phenomenal.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Yeah, so good. It was funny, like, I was interviewing the guy who created it, and he was practically in tears. He was like, you loved my game! Oh my god!
He is so sweet. I actually wrote a review of SteamWorld Dig for the first one. I can't remember even what slide I wrote it for. And it was a really good review. It was nice because I love the game. And he writes to me and thanks me for this review. I'm like, dude, he made this excellent game. Like, thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you for making this awesome game. There's nothing I love more as a critic than to shout the praises of a game I legitimately love to the heavens.
I mean, we're not monsters. We like games. We like good games. Come on,
but
people.
It's more than that. Like, I really, really like video games. And you know, I play so many of them, and you see so many of them cross your desk, that when one comes across your desk that just is not just good, that you don't just respect, but, like, speaks to you.
Yes.
That you just cannot put down. Like, it is almost a moving experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to say it's religious experience, but it's very moving. And so
it is,
and it's
very
doubly
emotional.
So to be able to go up to the creator and say, thank you. That was awesome. Thank you for that experience. So
speaking of Undertale coming to PS4.
And that game again.
That game again. That one game with the skeletons.
Oh, if you missed it the first time, which plenty of people did, there are plenty of people who could not play this very accessible game that could not be played on that can be played on almost any system. look, I'm not going to poo-poo this. I'm happy that it's coming out on console. Like,
wasn't it just PC?
It was just on Steam. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's going to be out on PS4 and the Vita. Hey, Vita sighting! Woo!
Did you play the original game?
I played as far as getting out of the opening area.
That's usually where
I got onto the next area.
Yeah.
So no.
When people decide that, like, you know, okay, this game isn't for me, it's usually around there. Either you're hooked or you're not.
Oh, no. I think Undertale is really cool. It was just, like, it wasn't like, you know, hooking me or whatever. So, which I guess that's because I was like not giving it as much attention as I probably should have.
Yeah, that's fair. Although there's certain mechanics that are done on the PC that I'm really wondering how they'll pull off on the PlayStation. So I'm curious to see where it goes. I will definitely give it a playthrough to see what the story is.
Yeah.
Not exactly a long RPG.
No, how long is it?
Well, there's three separate paths. I mean, there's a whole bunch of endings you can get, but there's three very distinct paths, and each one will take you about, like, 5 to 7 hours to get through.
All right. Well, I promise that I will finish it just as soon as I finish Persona 5, Nier Automata, Breath of the Wild.
On the pile.
I would be honest, like, there's so many games that I want to play at any given time. But I was having a long chat with Taylor Koch from, well, the sadly deceased Yahoo Esports, and I was lamenting how...
Oh.
Yes.
Why do they do this at E3? I hate that so much. When they
you know what they told them, by the way? They totally
what?
Told, well, you can go network at E3.
Oh.
Which is...
The hate inside of me boiling over.
Cold-blooded, my God. But... I felt, I like those guys, I felt very bad for them, but we were actually talking, and, like, literally the night before, and I'm going, man, you know, like, there are times where I literally just want to play Heroes of the Storm, and it can be really tough, it can be really tough to, like, dive headfirst into a new game, so, as a result, my backlog just keeps on growing, but, you know, there, and it will grow still further this holiday season, because...
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
After my initial fear that the RPG season would be barren has not come to fruition with Xenoblade Chronicles 2 and Divinity and South Park and Pokemon and God knows everything else, we are going to have a very busy holiday season, and that's going to continue right into the new year, where, I mean, hopefully, like, people were saying that Monster Hunter is not going to come out on... We didn't even talk about Monster Hunter, my God.
Yeah, that's right, crap.
Man, Monster Hunter.
That's right, Hunter World.
Yeah, the community is kind of up in arms about that one, by the way.
The fact that it's on the PS4?
Well, the fact that it's kind of looks a little more Western, it's clearly geared toward Western audiences, and it is, they're saying it's watered down. Like,
but how can you tell?
I mean, they're saying that, like, they, like, really strip down the UI, like, they're going for, like, a much more action-oriented approach as opposed to, like, the much more kind of mechanically, like, complex and nuanced version of Monster Hunter X or Generations, as we... Mm. Which some fans already were saying, Generations is watered down.
Of course, of course. It's the same old story from game to game to game. I mean, look at how many people say that Skyrim... Yeah, sure, it's simplified, but I still enjoyed it. What can I tell you?
Relatively speaking, is kind of a hardcore RPG, let's be honest here. But, yeah, Monster Hunter's coming out at some point. As always, Nadia, we have an embarrassment of riches, and we got lots to talk about.
We do. We're not going to run out of topics anytime soon.
Indeed. But I am going to go get some dinner, and I am going to go sleep for a week, because
me too.
It has been a long show. But for those of you who have been reading all of our stuff on US Gamer, thank you very much. If you missed it, we got lots of stuff on the site. By the time this podcast goes up, our E3 awards should be ready, locked, and ready to go. You can read the trailer, like, we rounded up the best trailers. We have announcements and recaps for all of the press conferences. We have lots of takes, lots of opinions. We played a whole bunch of games. So go check out our coverage on the site. And as always, thanks for listening. In the meantime, Axe of Blood God is a US Gamer podcast. You can follow us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold. Follow me on Twitter at @_capbot, Nadia at Nadia Oxford. Send us an email at usgamer@usgamer.net. And until next time, we'll be back next time as always. Same bat time, same bat location here on Friday. Do us a favor, review us on iTunes in the meantime. But yeah, thank you. We will be back next week. Until then, I've been Cat Bailey, and for Nadia and myself, thanks for listening. See you again. Happy adventuring.